Hello and welcome to the New Wave Heroes podcast. This episode features Australia's premier surf guitarist, Martin Cilia. During the conversation, Martin talks about his early life in Western Australia, his friendship with Hank Marvin, and being a member of legendary Australian surf band, The Atlantics. He also brings to life some of his vast vintage guitar and amp collection. And if that wasn't enough, we discuss life on the road with two of Australia's hardest working bands, Mental as Anything and The Radiators. Oh, and listen out for the Dick Dale story, that's a good one. The interview includes references to childhood friend Roy Phillips, who I interviewed in another episode of this podcast series. Roy went on to play drums with The Clash, Elvis Costello, Roxy Music, and many other great bands of the 70s and 80s. Martin joined me online at the end of a very hot day from his studio in Sydney. So how are you doing? You okay?
Yeah, good, Neil. Thank you. Yes, it's good. It's just in sunny Sydney today. We had 36 degrees yesterday. I think it was in the high 20s today, so it's been quite warm.
Really? So were you coming into your spring?
Yeah, we're in spring now. So 1st of December is summer over here. It's unusually warm early this year. It's, but we'll probably go a bit cooler again next week.
Because you're used to that now, aren't you? Because you've been there so long, I guess it's just...
Yeah, I've got to say, the first few years when we arrived in Perth, Western Australia, no air conditioning, yet 3 or 4 days in a row, 40 degrees plus, we didn't know what hit us. You know, it was really a whole other thing.
But yeah, Roy, because obviously, you know, Roy, you listened to the podcast, didn't you? And he was pals at school, which was, and he mentioned the name. And obviously, I was familiar with some of your back catalogue because being a Shads fan and a surf fan, whenever you do a search, then your name comes up, which is quite cool, really.
Oh, that's good. Okay, excellent. Yeah. But so I knew Roy from school days. And my mum still lived in the same house as Roy used to live in the street behind us. My mum to this day lives in the same house.
Wow, and that was 1972, I believe?
Yeah, it would be about that, because we moved there in 1968, so from England. And, 72, 73 would have been, yeah.
Because you're an Essex lad like me, just down the road, actually, to be honest.
Right, I was born in
Rochford, aren't you?
Rochford Hospital, yeah.
Yeah, I'm over near Colchester. I don't know if you've probably forgotten all about these places now.
Oh, so I know where there is. We used to go to the zoo. Used to go to the zoo there in Colchester.
Really? Well, it's still there. It's one of the best zoos in the country.
That's right. We used to go. It's just slightly north. Family was around that area, around Essex and Harlow and Royden. I sort of grew up in Rochford South End area until I was 9 years old.
Well, I'm having a blast listening to your back catalogue. Obviously, I was familiar with some of it, but just because it goes back such a long time now, doesn't it? But you mentioned there that you arrived in Australia in the early 70s. And a fun note here, your dad swapped the family radio for your first guitar. I bet he was popular, wasn't he?
Well, the thing is, my dad was a radio TV technician. And he trained with Echo Pie in the Arterial Road there in South End back in the late 50s, early 60s. So we were in Perth, and I was playing a little bit of acoustic guitar, just on a friend's guitar, and decided that electric guitar would be a good idea. And there was an ad in the local paper in the swap column. Someone wanted to swap a radio, an electric guitar for a radio. And my dad, being a tech, had a few radios around. So we rang him up and we did a swap for a guitar, electric guitar, against the radio. And I've still got that guitar.
Really?
Yeah, it's a Tiesco.
What does that play like compared to some of your Strats, I wonder?
Well, I must admit, it's under a bed at my mum's house and it hasn't been touched for, well, I'd say 40 years. So I don't really know. I just don't go near it. But it's probably got really light strings on it or really heavy strings or something, and it's probably... a bit clunky, I would think.
But you saved up for your first Strat, I think, doing paper rounds, is that right?
Yeah, doing paper rounds around Morley in Western Australia, and just any way I could, just earning a cent by cent, you know. And I got enough money together to have about three quarters, and then my dad kicked in the rest when he saw that I was, trying really hard. So he kicked in the next $100, whatever it was, and I've still got that guitar too.
Well, we'll come on to your guitar collection a bit later on, but that is some collection that you've got. It's unbelievable. We mentioned Roy there. You went to Morley High. You met Roy.
Yes.
You played your first gig there, I think, yeah?
Yeah, I did my first gig at Morley High. I must have been 12 or 13 years old. We played in the school hall. And, I met Roy shortly after that, I think. And his dad played drums, and I was pretty impressed with the way he played drums. And Roy exposed me to some they had a big record collection. I'm not sure it was Roy's or his dad's. I can't quite remember. But I remember hearing Jailhouse Rock, the Elvis Presley single, for the first time, not on a TV, in a movie or whatever. And I just remember thinking, gee, Elvis can sing so high in a full voice. No one ever mentions him like that. He was such a good singer, you know, and that's when I figured out the Elvis stuff. And they had a lot of 50s, 60s records that I hadn't come across before. So we used to sit there and play records a lot.
Yeah, because obviously the Shadsy influence was right from those early days, wasn't it? That's where it came from, I guess.
Yeah, the song that got me in was The Rise and Fall of Flinkelbutt. My dad used to tape off the TV, off the test pattern. They used to play music sometimes. Occasionally you had Shadows music playing, I think. My dad used to tape on the two-track reel-to-reel tape stuff. And one day we were just playing stuff, and I heard Flinkelbutt. And that's the track that got me in. I thought, gee, that's such a tough song. And I didn't know why. And I thought, I could almost have a go at playing that. And that's what got me in. Everyone says Apache is their first song, which is the first song I ever played in public was Apache. But The Rise and Flinkelbutt was just the sound of that recording is what got me in to wanting to play.
Yeah, and you played your first professional gig age 14. Do you remember where that was?
Morley? Oh, professional gig. Yeah, it was in the same suburb, Morley. There was a town hall, I think it was called a Progress Hall at the time, and we played our gigs in there to, like, you know, it's called 50-50 Dances. And so you play, you know, Foxtrots and your songs like Perfidia or whatever was around at the time, and you play a couple of waltzes, that sort of thing, and some pop songs, whatever was on the radio at the time. Can't quite remember all the songs, but, you know, that's early 70s, probably Tie Yellow Ribbon Around the Old Oak Tree or something like that. That's what you did back then.
Here we called it like a function band, I guess, or a party band, you know, whatever is popular at the time.
That's right. Yeah, that's pretty well what it was. And then I always did shadow songs to open each set, two or three songs each set. And they always went down well. I'm not saying I played them particularly well, but they always went down well, you know, and you just learn as you go along.
The first, I would say, professional proper band was the Flying Fonzarellis. Now you'll have to forgive me because obviously being over here, he was quite detached from we're quite detached from Australian music. So I hadn't heard of these guys, but
no,
yeah, you had a few hit records, I guess.
Well, yeah, I did a few bands before that, but then I actually came to London and played in London when I was about 20, 21, played around a little bit and worked out that it was really hard to survive just playing music. Because I had no infrastructure there. Like all the guys in the bands I was with would go home to their mum and dads. And so, you know, I go back to my bed, sit or whatever, and I got a call. I was in London about a year, I think, and I got a call from some mates in Western Australia saying, hey, we're doing this tour. Do you want to come and play? And I thought, well, good, I'll go back to West Australia, earn some money, then come back to London. Never went back. Gigs just kept happening in West Australia, and I kept getting paid. And and there's a band called the Flying Fonzarellis, which were regional. They're very regional band, just the Perth area. But, yeah, it did very well. You know, the crowds were just, for about 3 years, full houses everywhere. You know, we're on the front of the local papers all the time, and you couldn't even walk down the street. It was a bit weird, but it was only regional. It was only to that area.
Yeah, there is one or two YouTube videos which I saw which were fun on some cheesy kids' TV.
Yeah, well, exactly. We did all that sort of stuff. So it was a bit of a, you know, say it was just like a country town type West Australian thing, but even though Perth's not a country town, it was a bit like that. Yeah.
Do you still see those guys?
I talk to a couple of them. Sometimes I have email. But yeah, I live on the other side of the country now, so I don't really bump into them that much, but we still communicate a bit.
Yeah, well, that's right, because in 1989 he moved across to Sydney, didn't he? Was that because to kind of was there more opportunity there and maybe in Sydney?
Yeah, well, what I thought was, I thought every musician that I know, apart from local, I know through their recordings. Like everyone we're talking about, be the Shadows or Beatles, anybody, you know through their recordings. And I thought, there's no recording industry in Perth, Western Australia, or publishing. So I thought I'd go where the business is. So I went to Sydney. I was either Sydney or Melbourne, the two towns I was looking at. And then I got offered a run of gigs in Sydney with a band for a few weeks. So I came to Sydney. And I thought I'll stay for a year. And that was like 30-something years ago. And I'm still here, keep getting work. So that's why I left Perth, really, because Perth's a great place, but no music business as such.
It's very isolated over there, isn't that side?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think I was in Sydney for like 2 or 3 weeks and I got a publishing deal with Polygram. It was like that came out of the blue. If I stayed in Perth, that wouldn't have happened. You know, just right place, right time. And sometimes you just got to go where the action. Well, in England, it's the same. You kind of had to move to London back in the day, you know.
I think it still holds, to be honest. If you really want to, you know, not just the music industry, as most businesses, if you want to do any good, you have to head for the city, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So it's still the same, yeah. So that's my motivation. And also there's more population on this side of the country, which means you could potentially get more record sales, all that sort of stuff.
So that's where you met the Atlantics, wasn't it? They heard some of your solo stuff and invited you to join them.
Well, basically, the thing about the Atlantics is that throughout the 90s, I was writing and recording, but I didn't release any solo albums. I was just working for other people and doing collaborations. And then in the late 90s, I thought, there's no records coming out that I like. So I thought, I'm going to make a record that I would like to buy. So I had songs that I'd been writing since I was 12 years old. And I wrote a batch of new songs. And I decided to make an album just for myself, basically. And I bumped into Bosco Bosnak, the original bass player from the Atlantics. Someone said, oh, you should meet him. And so I went to where he was and I met him and I had a cassette in my pocket. And what I did was I gave myself a deadline. I booked a recording studio. I gave myself 3 months. I booked a week in the studio, whatever it was, 3 months ahead. Right, deadline. You've got to do it. So this is about a month out. I ran into Bosco, the bass player, and I said, here's a cassette of couple of my songs. If you like them, I'd love you to come and play bass on whatever you want to do. And he says, oh, I'll have a listen and see. And then I didn't hear anything for about a week, and then he rang me up and he goes, look, I don't want to play on your recordings, but would you be interested in joining the Atlantics? He said, I've played it the other guys, I love it. Would you be interested in joining? And I said, well, let's get together and see how we all got on. And then he says, oh, it's just one thing. We want to record your songs. And that's how it went. And next thing I know, in the studio, it was done. The album came out. We're doing TVs, tours. It was just, doors just opened. Yeah, it was pretty quick.
So was this before, because you've got the Revenge of the Surf Guitar album. Was that before that or after that?
My solo stuff came out after. The only reason I did the solo stuff was because the Atlantics retired. Right. And the record company came to me and said, their words were, what's it going to take to get a solo album out of you? That was their words. And that's when I did the Revenge of the Surf Guitar album. So that was in 2007.
Because that won an award. The Just Plain Folk Music Award.
That's right. We got that in the States. Mm. Yeah, it's out of America. We won that. And also, I think 1 year the Atlantics won for the album Point Zero. So we won two things. I got one. I can't remember the same year or year apart. I can't quite remember. But that was good. It's good to, you know, because we don't know how much the music travels, how much it reaches. You know, I know that, you know, England was always slow for me, which I found interesting, because America, I did well in America, well in European countries, but England was always, I never thought anybody ever heard my songs in England. I thought, oh, I'm not getting, no one ever says anything, I never hear anything back, or, you know, maybe see a few record sales, but nothing great, and I thought England would be the market, you know, but anyway, you know, with the surf stuff, it's like...
Yeah, it's the surf scene, isn't it? It's just... Because I mentioned my radio station, Atlantic Surf Radio, but yes. That's partly why I started that, because I'm down in Cornwall quite a bit. We've got a place down in Cornwall, and
Right.
There's just, I mean, there's a surf, it's the surf capital of the UK, but you never hear any surf music down there. It's crazy.
That's right. I know. I know Cornwall. My family, my mother's side family, their name is Tree Rise. That's Tree Rise. They used to own the post office in Portreath. So I know. We used to go there for the holiday. I know Cornwall reasonably well. And so yeah. So it's Essex, Cornwall. It's like two places I know.
Yeah. Exactly. But yeah, you'd think the surf scene would be really good there, but it's there's lots of surfing, but you don't hear surf music, which is bizarre, really.
No, well, I'm not when I've been there or what I've seen. And the strange thing is with what I was doing, I was selling it back to California. It's like selling ice to the Eskimos, is what I thought. I thought, wow, they've got some good stuff there already. They don't need mine, you know. But I seem to do quite well in California, the States, California. Finland, another place. Finland, I do well in Finland.
Did you tour America?
Yeah, I did 10 years ago, 2013, I think twice, or 2011 as well. I did a run of shows all the way from San Francisco down to San Diego, a couple of radio performances, and it was good. People knew the stuff, knew the songs. So I did it solo, you know, with my own band, not as the Atlantics. And, yeah, it was good. Hopefully I'll go back again soon.
So you're do you get like session guys in for that when you tour, or people you know?
Last tour I did, well, what we did was, before I did the last tour, we the Atlantics did our final tour. We played all the way from Finland down to, we end up in Athens, was our last gig in 2013, and the drummer from that band, another Perth guy, because the Atlantics drummer got was unwell at the time, so he came and filled in, and I took the same drummer to America, but yeah, basically my own guys. Just people I know, and all my people might play on the records, even though I tend to end up playing everything except the drums mostly, because I'm normally the only one around. So that's how it ends up, mostly on the records, because, you know, I'm just there. It's got to be done, you know. The Atlantics, we did that all the way from Finland. We did maybe 10 dates through Italy, which was really good. And they knew our stuff. They knew the Atlantics repertoire, which was great.
So you did, I think you did four or five solo albums, and then Shadow Man, which was, I guess, your tribute to the Shadows, which is, that's awesome. That really is good.
Yeah, the Shadow Man album was like, that was the record company's idea, that name. And I just did it because, well, that's what I like to do. I've got another album that's been, I've actually got two albums done. Picked out 12 songs for an album to come out hopefully this year. All the music's done. It's just down to get the final track order and mastering and artwork. But it's more surf-orientated now. I went back to the surf thing. Bit like, you know, Hank Marvin meets Dick Dow is what this one is.
Have you got your own studio? Do you record at home, or how do you do that?
I do now. I'm actually sitting. It's quite, I don't know if you can see on the camera here, but I'm in my amp room. I don't know if you can quite see what's, some of it's covered over, but there's Vox amps and Marshall amps. I'm just sitting in here quiet, and I can get a good good recording. So, yeah, I've got my own. So I'm sitting in a room of about, I don't know how many amps are in here, but quite a few. And I just, there's a room beside here with the studio in it. Yeah. Probably had this about 10 years. Before that, it was in my lounge room. In the last place I lived, and the reason I got a studio was because we used to go hire studios and with tapes, 24 track tapes. If you wanted to listen to them, you had to go and hire a studio to listen to them. So I ended up buying a 24 track tape machine and a mixing desk and just put it in a lounge, so we could all listen to the songs. And that's how it all started. Next thing I know, we got a studio. You know, so yeah, so I do. Yeah, so I do. I'm independent. As far as that goes now.
Yeah, I saw as you panned around there, I could see your Vox amps. You tend to favour the classic combo of the AC30 and the Strat, which is, you can't go wrong with that, can you?
No, look, I think a Strat, an old Strat and an old Vox, I'm just looking around here, no guitars in this room, but I've still got the old Marshalls. Everything is, I think I've probably well got most everything I've ever bought. I've still got it all. I've still got my very first Vox amp I bought secondhand in Perth in the late 70s, I bought off a keyboard player, I didn't know what Vox amps were supposed to sound like, but I'd seen them in pictures of the Shadows on their music books and record covers. I thought, oh, I've got to get one of those, and I found one, And I just said to the guy, plugged in, it worked. I said, I don't know, was this good? No, I don't know. I've got nothing to compare it to. Anyway, that's the amp I use on most of the records now. Still got it. You know, got lucky.
Very lucky. What's the second-hand market like in Australia for kind of vintage guitars?
Limited. I've kind of got, I just buying tools for the trade really at the time. I was doing a lot more session work for people. You need all the different sounds. But these days, I don't know how you could afford it. It's and you've got to find stuff that's legit, you know. It's I'm lucky, I'm reasonably educated by just when you own something, you learn about it, whether it be a car or a house or guitar amplifiers or guitars. So I've learned by owning stuff, and luckily I've not made too many mistakes, if any. So I've still got, pretty much looking around the amp room here, and I know there's more than what's in here. Just don't know where they are at the moment. But, yeah, it's just, you know, it's one of those things. And when we were touring the Atlantics in Australia, freight and moving equipment around was a bit of an issue. So we used to have a set of amps in Perth, a set of amps in Melbourne, a set of amps in Sydney, and we had them around Australia. We used to have all rigged around, all around. So when we just fly in and we've got stuff we know is good, it's all our stuff. And then we went in, the band stopped, then we went into lockdown. I pretty well got everything back here now. Got it back in one spot, except there's still a couple of old boxes in Perth. But that's what we did. We just basically just put gear, because when you're hiring, you don't know what you're going to get, and the sounds were not always great. And the valves are old, and the amps, they never give you what you ask for. So that's what we did. But they're really hard to come by here. There's not many.
Yeah, most guitarists would say you can never have too many guitars. But do you think you've got enough now? What do you think?
Look, yeah, it's like I don't feel like I've got too many or too little. It's if any sound I want, I can just go to and get. And it's getting guitar sounds for me now. If I want to record a song, it literally takes me the time it takes to plug the lead in and turn the amps on. I've got it that finely tuned. I'm not searching for sounds anymore. Just not looking, you know. Which is really great because it saves a lot of time. And as you get older, I don't know, for me, it's just I don't want to sit there and fiddle with, not, you know, I just want to do it. Play one. Most of my stuff I do in one take, and I like to do first or second go through. After that, I get a bit bored or whatever it is, and it doesn't sound as good. So, you know, and I record with the reverb. I've got a couple of reverb tanks in here, the Fender ones. I record with those onto the tape as well. So you can't just drop in, you know, because it cuts off the reverb, unless you've got a big drum break or something. So that's how I like to record. And so when you do your mix, you just turn the faders up. It's all just there, sounds, the drums, and everything.
You're still recording on tape, yeah?
Well, we were up until about 2 years ago. Transferred everything to Pro Tools. It's just the technicians who were servicing the tape machines have all retired. You know, they're all 10 or so years older than me, and they've all retired, you know. And so the tape machine's gone. We transferred everything. All the tapes have been transferred over to Pro Tools. But we use the Pro Tools rig pretty much like a tape recorder. That's how it's set up, just like as if we would use a tape recorder. We use it the same way.
So for the guitar nerds that may be listening, how do you get your because everybody wants that classic Hank Marvin echo, which is almost impossible to recreate. Everybody's looking for that sound, aren't they? What do you use?
I've never tried to emulate the Hank Marvin sound because I did think, well, Hank does it better than anybody, and I'll just be always chasing myself if I try to get on that road. I just do what I like. We've got some one here, a Klemm Echo Lek, which were popular in Australia, a German echo. Bit noisy. I've got a couple of Wem copycats, but these days I use a Boss pedal, DM2 or DM3 Boss pedal from the early 80s. Often, if I want the more Hank sound, I'll use a Roland 301 Echo. We've got a 301 and a 3 triple. Jim, the other guitar playing Atlantic, has got a 555. Sometimes we use that. And if we want the authentic old sound with the overdriven input, like with the hotter up guitar sound, we use the Echo Lek. But the Echolet's so noisy. It's got a big hum and it's just so we only do that sometimes. But yeah, basically it's straight into a Vox AC30. And my go-to guitar is a 1961 Strat, which I've used on most things. It's just a guitar I just plug in and it always just sounds right.
Is that the white one that I've seen you play in videos?
Yeah, that'd be the white one. And Jim, the other guitar player in the Atlantis, he had a 61 Strat as well, a red one, but that's now in the there's a museum in Sydney called the Power Earth Museum. That's now in the museum. So he's retired it. So, yeah, the old Strat, to me, that's the secret weapon, finding a good guitar.
Yeah, I saw you in a picture of you and Norm's Norm's guitars in America, and they're in Los Angeles, aren't they?
They are, yeah. That was 2011. I ended up buying it. Well, I went to America with nothing, and I landed some gigs when I was there. I thought, I'm going to need a guitar. So I went down to Norm's, and I was just going to buy a reissue. You know, just nothing too special. I went and played a few, and I thought, there's old ones on the wall. And I played a couple, and this one that I ended up getting, which is a 1965 L-Series Strat, which is normally a year I wouldn't do. I played it, and I went, I didn't have to plug it in. This guitar's great. It was like my 61. It had the same sort of thing. So I ended up buying that. When I was basically buying a $2,000 guitar or something, it came out with, half a house or something. So my credit card was bending. It's like, I've still got that guitar. It's around, and I use it. That's probably the second best or third best Strat I've got. It's really good. I got that from Norm.
And also, there's another photograph of you with Hank Marvin. So you've obviously met Hank. Have you played with him?
Several times. No, we've not played together, even though a couple of years ago, directly before lockdown, I was with a band touring, quite a well-known Australian band, and we were touring, and I was in the hotel before the gig and got a phone call. Oh, Hank's going to be at your gig tonight. And I went, oh, yeah, right, whatever. So I get on stage. There he was sitting, 5 feet in front of me, him and his wife and his son and his son's fiance. Anyway, I'd met Hank a number of times. So, so it was all cool. And at the end of this band, we did a version of Flinkleburn, just for the heck of it, you know. But not the version that Shadows did. We did similar, but it was faster, a bit more rocky, whatever. And after the concert, I was talking to Hank. And, I was playing a red Strat through a Vox AC30. And he comes up to me and he goes, I'd be really proud to have your sound. And I went, what? I knew he could hear my amp off stage. He was that close, so it wasn't through the PA or anything. I know he could hear it directly. And then he's asking me all these questions about my setup, my strings, the guitar, everything. And I said, hey, I'm supposed to be asking you these questions. He's still, he gets excited about music and guitar stuff. And ultimately, I just pointed to the red guitar. I said to the, got the red guitar. I said, pointed to the red guitar, pointed to the Vox amp. I just said, Hank, it's all your fault. And then he says, let's get a bottle of red. it's like that. But so I'm friends with Gary Taylor, who plays with Hank, and I see Hank every now and then. But I don't get to Perth enough these days. Last time I was there, I think he had the COVID. And so he wasn't seeing anybody. But, he gets out. He still sounds. He played my guitar unplugged because he wanted to have a play of it. And he played a couple of things. Just sounded like Hank Marvin off the record with not even plugged in. Just sounded like, he played Beginning of Man in Mystery and a few other little things I was asking questions about. Just, who it is. He didn't need anything. Just guitar. He never played before. Just sounded exactly like him on the record. It was amazing. Because I'm like a kid in the candy store going, can you play that? Can you play this? Can you play that? And, and he's just playing these things. And he's just, that's it. doesn't matter. Yeah, just the guitar, not plugged in.
That's a dream come true, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it was. It's like I look back and I think, wow, how did that happen? And someone said, were you nervous? I said, no, I wasn't nervous. Because the band I was playing in, I was confident with what I was doing. I just had to do a good job every night. And I knew the repertoire. I knew what I was doing. And I thought, let's just keep it fun. But it was, you just don't know how things turn around. Because when I was growing up, Hank Marvin was as famous as the Queen in England. So it's kind of interesting now, all those years later. But now he's still a music fan. He just loves it.
He plays a lot of gypsy jazz now, doesn't he, acoustic?
Yeah, that's just sort of, he's retired, allegedly from the red guitar, and he plays the, gypsy jazz, his hobby. That's what he calls it. He plays it very well. It's just so musical, melodic, gets a great sound. And he's very good. But unfortunately, I think observing how some of the other people, the Shadows fans, react to it, some people just don't get it, what he's doing. and they want to hear the red guitar play Apache. You know, some people are limited to that, but I think I kind of felt sorry for Hank. I thought, man, what you're doing is like world class. It's really, really exceptional. And I know he's getting booed by some diehard Shadows fans, which I find disappointing, you know. And it, so as we said, it's his hobby. It's his hobby. So, yeah.
Because you played a bit of jazz, didn't you, for a while? I think between jobs?
Yeah, well, in the 90s, when music went quite techno and house and all that sort of stuff was big, I thought, well, I'll try something else. So I went and played, yeah, I was playing like in swing bands, like jazz bands, and played a little bit of the Django stuff and just jazz standards and that sort of thing. I've actually got a jazz album written, an instrumental jazz album. I haven't released it, but I've got it recorded. I just thought, well, what's the market? Who's going to buy, you know, a jazz album? This, you know, there were some Latin tunes and some swing tunes, and yeah, I might still do that next few years. But yeah, it's, that's why I ended up getting the jazz guitars. I bought a couple of Gibson F-hole guitars and got into that a little bit, and yeah, that was all good fun.
And you've met Dick Dale as well, because he's the guy that started it all.
Well, Dick Dale, yeah, he's the, yeah, it is. That was interesting. Okay, so 2011, I was in California, and I was only supposed to go there just to, you know, not, it wasn't a professional visit. It was just a period just to see people and a bit of a touristy thing, you know, just going. And I contacted a friend of mine who, Paul Johnson, who I knew only on the internet. Paul Johnson was in a band called the Bel Airs. He wrote a song called Mr. Moto, and he had, you know, pretty good success when he was young. So I sent him an email and said, I'm going to be in LA this week. You know, gave him the dates. So I said, are you playing or is anybody you know playing? I would like to come down and you know, see the gigs. Within 5 minutes, a phone rings. Paul rang me from California. He says, you're not coming here and not playing. We'll put a band together. You can play. I went, oh. I said, I'm just going to turn up with a guitar pick. That's all I'm going to have. I didn't want to have to go through all the visa thing and all that, so I'm just going to take a guitar. Anyway, so I turn up there, got to the hotel. Next thing I know, there's a knock on the door. Paul's standing there with two Strats. And we just jammed all night. And then I end up playing some gigs. I'll get to the Dick Dale bit in a minute. So I'm there. And then on the Sunday, we did a gig at Don the Beachcombers. And these people were filming some stuff on their phone and sending it. I don't know where they were sending it, but obviously Dick Dale saw some of it. And these people approached me and said, what are you doing tomorrow? It was like a Monday the next day. And I said, well, not, I think real plan. I was planning on just, don't know, I think I thought I might go to Austin or somewhere, have a look there. Because in America, you just go and get a plane, off you go. And they said, well, Dick Dale wants to meet you. I said, well, if he wants to meet you, I'm here. And they said, oh, we'll be around at 10 o'clock in the morning to pick you up. I went, oh, yeah, you know, probably had a few cocktails. And I thought, oh, that, you know, just talk, you know. And the next morning, about 9:30, they rang and said, oh, on our way. In the car for a few hours, I thought I was kidnapped and went through Death Valley. We were heading out to his ranch. So basically, yeah, we got to his ranch. So we get to his ranch and they go, oh, sometimes Dick doesn't want to talk to people, you know, so don't be surprised if he doesn't want to talk to you. I'm going, he's come all this way? It's like, anyway, so we get there. So it just was pretty sort of just waiting. He come up to me, looking up and down, he goes, you better come in then. And turns out what he heard, someone sent him a version of my first solo album. The song's called Revenge of the Serpentar. Dick does that, what's called that speed picking stuff, you know, the little tremolo picking. And he does it on single notes. As it turns out, he saw me doing it on two notes, two strings. Because Hank always played like a two note thing, like Summer High. It's like a harmony thing. So I was doing that.
Double stops, yeah.
Double stops, that's it. And he goes, never seen that before. That's great. I go, what? You know? Anyway, so we sat in his lounge room for a few hours and, yeah, he was really good, interesting person and very knowledgeable. And it was just probably the weirdest day of my life, I think, that when we went out to the ranch. And I was there for a couple of hours. He just turns to me and goes, what size shoes do you take? I went, what? What size shoes do you take? So I think, oh, English size, you know, American size, you know, yeah, different sizes, you know. I just say, hey. So he took his shoes off and says, put these on. So I'm walking around his lounge room wearing his shoes. And I'm just going, this is bizarre. Anyway, so he gave me some good advice and some good things. We spoke about different timings and phrasings and stuff like that. It's really good, really educational. Yeah. So that was my day with spent with Dick Dale's Ranch.
Wow, you can dine out on that story for the rest of your days, I think. That's,
yeah, there's more. Like, you know, he's telling me how he built a runway on his ranch, you know, an air light plane runway. He built that. He's telling me all this stuff. And anyway, there's lots and lots of stories there.
So tell me about the Mentals. Mental as anything. You was invited to join that band, a very famous Australian band.
Right. I don't know how many people overseas have heard of some of these bands I've been in, but Mental as Anything, I knew the guys previously, and I just got back from America in 2013, which did the Atlantics tour, and I did my solo band, got back to Australia, and I thought, what do I do now? And there's a message there saying, Mental as Anything is looking for you. So I rang up, and they said, oh, what are you up to? I said, oh, I just got back. I haven't got anything really that much planned. And they said, oh, look, Australia Day next year. Do you want to come and play with the band? Start with the band. I went, okay. So we get to the band had Mentals at a break around about Christmas that year, and just after Christmas, so I thought I'd better ring up and find out when we were going to rehearse and, you know, what songs to learn. So I rang up. I said, so when we're rehearsing? Rehearse? We've seen you play. Rehearse? Just get the greatest hits out. Just learn the greatest hits, you know. Basically. So I went down the record shop, bought the greatest hits album, and they sent me a gig tape, a live gig tape, so I had an idea. And so I turn up at this gig, and no sound check with the band, nothing. The first night I played with the band was on stage in front of like 8 or 10,000 people, and it was filmed. It was like, and I didn't know about it. They just do what they do. It was Australia Day event over here, Australia Day, end of January. And so I did the second gig, and I thought, oh, it must be okay because I'm still here, you know. And it's like, you know, I stayed with the band till the end. But we only stopped that band because the lead singer, Greedy Smith, had a heart attack, passed away. It was all quite sudden. And we were planning to come to the UK. We had a few things, and a few irons in the fire in Europe and the UK. And just after he passed away, one of the songs he wrote, a song called Live It Up, reached number one in the charts in England due to the Rangers, because the Rangers soccer team took it as their theme song, unofficial theme song. And that was enough for us to be at a tour.
Yeah, that was in, was it from the Crocodile Dundee film? Is that where that came from?
It was song? In Crocodile, yeah, it was in Crocodile Dundee, that song. Yeah, that's what made it famous.
Yeah, it's on the soundtrack, I believe.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
So that kind of brings us up to date, because you're now playing with a band called The Radiators, and that's another band, you have to forgive me, I haven't heard of them, but a big band in Australia for years.
The Radiators are probably that one, next to the Mental as Anything, but the next hardest working band in Australia. And that, again, I knew the guys previously. I got the call. It was like, didn't see that one coming. And they've only had like one member change in 35 years or something. You know, the two guys are still there from the beginning. The drummer's been with them 35 years, and I'm the new guy. But they've got a diehard following. As our manager says, Radiators fans are rusted on. That's how he puts it. He says, we do gigs and people just turn, it's like a little scene, but great crowds, great, you know, they've got just diehard following. And they worked a lot, over the years building up a following. And they, the band is sounding really good at the moment. It sounds magnificent, like really rocks. It's not a quiet band, it's quite a loud band. I mean, I've got to use two AC30s, box amp. I've got two on the road just to keep up with the volume. But the band rocks. Oh, it's not a quiet band. It's like the old days, you know, a good rock band. Yeah, and the songs are quite well known, especially on the eastern side of Australia. Yeah, so.
So do you tour much with those guys?
Yeah, we're at a couple of gigs last week. We go to Queensland quite a bit. So we fly up to Brisbane, which is an hour and a bit on the plane, and then we go from there, or we might fly up to Cairns or somewhere. But, yeah, we tour, not Mental as Anything, but the biggest touring band. Like we go to New Zealand, China, whatever, plus all around Australia, we'd be everywhere. My frequent fly points were looking really good. Now we're just with the Radiators, mainly on the East Coast. I've been in the band, going on 2 years. I've done every state in Australia with them. And territory, we played everywhere, and we go up the north coast in a couple of weeks, back out there. But it's good, a good bunch of guys, good band to tour with.
Because the distances in Australia are so vast, you must spend all your time touring when you're on a plane, aren't you?
more plane. Like, we actually drove the other day. It was north of Sydney. It's about a four-hour drive. We all travel together. About four-hour drive. We decided on Saturday night, let's drive home. So we got home about like 4 a.m. or something, because we lost an hour with daylight saving here, so we lose an hour. And, but we decided we wanted to go home, so we drove home after the gig. So it was about 4 a.m, wandered in. So, but yeah, as you get older, you manage it better. When you're younger, you know, you might have a few beers and stuff, and it doesn't really matter because you can recover quite quickly. These days, you've got to really pace it.
Because it's not all rock and roll, because I heard you play ABBA's Mamma Mia. What's that all about?
Oh, right. That was a lockdown thing. I did a bunch of songs as a challenge. I just did it for my own fun. I thought, what can I do with this? What can I do with that? And I did a bunch of songs. I did On the Beach, which was a Cliff and the Shad song. And the reason I did On the Beach was because I thought, even Hank hasn't done an instrumental version of that. It's a hard one to do. And the ABBA one, I thought, how can I make this into a guitar instrumental and rock it up a bit? So I just had a go at that. And it was just all a bit of fun. And then I thought, well, I put a six-track EP out of what stuff I had laying around just for the fun of it. But it's funny how many people have said to me about the ABBA song.
Why not? I mean, you can't go wrong with ABBA, can you? I mean, a classic pop.
That's what I thought. Good melodies, good arrangements. Yeah.
Very popular. Yeah, so this year, 60 years of the Atlantics, you're back together again. And the new album, Still Making Waves, amazing. I downloaded it. I can't stop playing that, to be honest. It's really good.
Thank you. Yeah, that was... we recorded that probably about a year ago, and it was released on Australia Day this year, 60 years since the song Bombora. And, it's been going really well, getting great response. And the band still sounds like the Atlantics, still sounds the same from what I, you know, can tell. It's always hard when you're in the band to, you know, be objective, but I think it sounds pretty well like the band sounds.
Where was that recorded?
It was done here at my studio. It's all done here.
It's an awesome sound. It really is. I'll tell you, very good.
So the guitar, the guitars and the bass. Yeah, I think it was recorded here, the whole thing. There's a room next to me. I've got a drum stage set up, and this room I'm in now with all the guitar amps. We just have amps in here and the bass in another room. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it just goes to show you don't need to be in Abbey Road to get that sound, because that's really is very, very good.
Thank you. Yeah, I find it very hard to tell sometimes because when you're so close to it, you know, you just think, oh, I like it. Hopefully other people will like it, you know. And and with the Atlantics, it's a band as well. It's not me doing a solo album, it's a band. So everyone sort of says what they think, and, you know, you try and make it work between you all. But I like being in a band, and the only reason I do solo stuff is because there's no band.
So is that your white Strat on there that you're playing?
It would be, mostly. And I think... Jim, the other guitar player, might have used one of my guitars a bit as well. I've got two white Strats. This is the second one, but it's a 62. It's a year newer, and it looks more white. But I have that around, and I have heavier strings and maybe a wound G string on it. And I think Jim used that. The other guitar player, the Atlantics, I think he used that on some of the stuff because it had the wound G string and stuff. So yeah, often we'll just swap whoever's there. We'll just swap guitars between us, you know. Just hand the guitars across or whatever. You play that, you know. It's very much old school, you know.
Because you've got your own signature guitar now, haven't you? Which I think is sold out.
They have. They went really quick. I've been playing one at the Radiators gigs. I play one at every Radiators gig, same one. That English guy, Alan Imbussel, approached me and said, oh, I like your playing, can I build you a guitar? And I said, well, sure. And so we just rattled a few ideas off. This would be in 2017. Sent me a prototype. And then, so we must have got about 50 or so, and they sold out and can't really get any more. So the Martin Celia Alan Imbussel custom guitars are quite hard to get. I've only got the one white one, which I play, and I wouldn't mind buying another one back, actually.
Really?
Well, yeah. I've got red. My spare guitars are red, same, but in red. The white ones, I can't find one. I wouldn't mind one. Yeah. Anyway, one will turn up.
Where did they go? Did they go all over the world?
Some went to America. Some went to Finland. A couple went to Finland. I think maybe a couple went to England. I can't quite. Yeah, a couple in England. And some Europe and rest around Australia. Yeah, so they.
So you mentioned Finland. Yeah, you mentioned Finland there. I saw a YouTube video. You playing live with the Atlantics about 10 years ago at some festival there, which is amazing. Absolutely brilliant. That was really good.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we did that. And it was, one of those summer festivals where it doesn't really get dark. And they said, oh, you're on at midnight. I said, oh, okay, that's a bit late. Won't everyone be going home by then? So, oh, no, it's just when it's a peak. And it almost went a bit dim when we played. Oh, you probably saw the videos. It's sort of not dark, but it's kind of like, you know, dusk. And that was, that was fun. Different sort of crowd, different sort of way of doing things there. But it was good. And the interesting thing I found there was when we played, I heard a couple of bands play before us, and the support band, one support band's played some Atlantic songs, which I found interesting. Not ones we were playing, luckily, but, you know, they just come up and say, oh, do you mind if you play a couple of your songs? I said, no, it doesn't matter. Do it, you know. That happened in Italy as well, which I thought was interesting because we just don't know from – Australia's quite isolated. We don't know how things are going around the rest of the world always, you know. So it's really good to get some feedback.
Yeah, whoever did the sound on that gig was very, very good. And the bass player, was he the Atlantics bass player? Because he was
– No, he was – he's actually a friend of mine from Perth, Hayden. We've been in bands in the 80s in Perth together, and our bass player couldn't, LeBiancic Bosco couldn't make the trip, so I rang him up and said, hey, you feel about coming to Europe with us? And he came over and we rehearsed and off we went. But Hayden Pickersgill, his name is, he's great. But we've been in bands for years since the early 80s. So, that worked out well. And Lloyd, the drummer that was filling in for Peter Hook, because Peter Hook was unwell at the time, Lloyd's a guy who came to, another Perth guy, came to America with me following that tour. So it's all sort of the same people.
So what's next then? Well, you mentioned an album earlier. When's that going to come out, do you think?
I'm hoping later this year. The music's all done. It's just going to be mastered and the art was going to be finalised. And, I'll probably change a couple of song titles because instrumental song titles you can just muck around with, change them around. Mm. But that's about ready. And I've got a second album like that almost done. But and I've got a few things recording. When you've got your studio here and you're getting locked down, you can just do stuff, you know. I just have to ring up a drummer, get a drummer mate around and say, hey, come around and play some tunes for me. And once I've got the drums down, I'm off, you know. I'll do another. The album I've got coming up next is a cross between Dick Dowell and Hank Martin. I think it'd be like, it's got the edge, but it's also got the melodies. The thing about Hank is he always had the melodies. So that's what I'm going to be doing next.
Fantastic. Well, I look forward to that. Thank you very much for your time this morning, Martin. I really appreciate that.
Thank you, Neil.
It's very, very interesting, especially as a fan of surf music and the Shadows. I mean, you can't go wrong talking to you.
Well, the Shadows thing is, it's just to me, it was just such a, I can't even think of, everybody in England at the time was influenced by it. I just found that I was sort of the younger guy at the time. I was the younger guy playing it who knew the songs, you know. And and I try and learn the best I could off the records and stuff. And now with YouTube and backing tracks and all that, it's just a lot easier to learn the songs, I think. But I just learned them. Sometimes I've learned them wrong, but I've also learned from that. But just the last thing in the Shadows I will say is people always knock that album that they did with the keyboard player, you know, Shades of Rock. I don't know if you're familiar with that album. It came out, I think, when Bruce left, that brief period where Bruce left. And I learned from that album, I learned how to improvise from that album. It's like Hank would always do songs like Johnny B. Good or Something or all those, you know, a couple of Creedence songs or whatever. And Hank would always make up a solo. I think Get Back was another one. Hank would always make up his own guitar solo. So I started copying his solos that he made up to pop songs like, you know, Beatles songs and stuff like that. And I thought, oh, so that's how you do it. So I learned Hank's playing on that album is really, really good. And I'm just disappointed they didn't get much more credit for it. You know, his playing on that album is just really up the top, you know. A lot of the guys don't see it. I'm a bit disappointed about that. Anyway, that's where I learned a lot of how to make up solos in songs. That
So have you still got family back in the UK? Do you come back at all?
No, I haven't been back to the UK in 20 years. I've got some cousins, Royd and Harlow way. Grandparents there have gone along many years now. And like I say, my grandparents used to have the Portsmouth Post Office for years in Cornwall. And I've got some cousins around, probably scattered around Essex and that. But no, I haven't been back for a long time. I'm about due. I've got to come to the UK sometime in the next few years, I think. I've been everywhere else. I've been in Europe a few times and did some concerts in Spain, the Atlantics, probably 15 years ago or so, and a few other places. But no, I haven't been back to the UK. I just don't know. I think last time I was in London, I was shocked at how much the road system had changed around the city. You couldn't just drive around like you used to when I lived there. You know, I had to get my little minivan. On a Sunday, you could park outside Buckingham Palace or Number 10. You can't even get in the street now. Yeah. You know, and I was a bit, you can't do that anymore. You can't do this anymore. It's just changed so much, you know. And I'm back due for a visit, and it'd be nice to come over and actually play some shows, you know. It'd be a good opportunity. So I'll see how that goes and see what happens there.
Yeah, you'll have to hook up with Roy.
Well, absolutely. Well, perfect. Roy would be perfect, you know, and put a little band together.
He's an amazing drummer. I mean, you've got some fantastic stories because you listened to the podcast, didn't you? It's interesting you went to the same school, then you kind of drifted apart and followed very different careers, if you like, but both in music and did extremely well, which is great.
And both still doing it, just haven't stopped, you know. So, no, Roy, that's a really good idea. I need to think about that. Possibly going to be going to do in the States next year, the SG101 Festival. I've been invited to do that, so we'll see how that comes along. And maybe after that I could do UK or something. But I've also got to pick my time of the year in the UK, not to do it in the middle of the winter. So
it's the autumn now, but it's raining now outside. So we get a hard time for our weather, you know what it's like. But it's not as bad as what people make out, to be honest.
No, I know. But especially down in Cornwall, it's quite reasonable. So it'd be quite reasonable, but not like in up north somewhere. I've actually never been to Scotland. That's one thing I want to do, but not in winter.
I've never been, and I live here.
So. Oh, really? Right. I've been here. I've been to Wales.
I've travelled a lot. Yeah, I've travelled quite a bit, but I've been to Ireland and everywhere, but not to Scotland, bizarrely.
Yeah, I'm still there this time.
All right. Cheers, Martin. I really appreciate
your
time.
Pleasure.
And we'll hopefully catch up again at some point. I'm sure we will.
Sounds good. And thank you, Neil.
Yeah, I should keep track of your career. Look out for your new album. As I say, the most recent one with the Atlantics, that's on my repeat list at the moment. Really good. Really enjoying that.
Excellent. Yeah, well, it's the last thing that's been released that I did. And the next album's going to be called Dawn of the Surf Guitar. That's the title I'm working with, Dawn of the Surf Guitar. It seems if a surf guitar, if I put surf guitar in the title, people tend to, now I know what it is.
Well, that's a key search term in Google, surf guitar, so you should do it right.
So this one's going to be Dawn of, I think that's what I'm going to go with. Hopefully that's going to be done real soon.
All right, let me know when it's out and I'll check it out, all right?
Cheers. Thanks, Neil.
My thanks again to Martin, and I hope you found that as interesting and entertaining as I did. You can find out more about Martin and his music via his website, martincilia.com. The website also includes detailed information about his vast vintage guitar and amp collection, which is a great read. The Atlantics have their own website at theatlantics.com, which is another great resource for information about the band's history and music. In the interview, I mentioned a live gig in Finland with The Atlantics, which is a must watch if you are a guitarist and enjoy surf rock and twangy guitar instrumentals. If you search live at Nastaland 2013, you should find it easily. But I must warn any guitarists that do watch it, you will probably want to sell your guitars after watching Martin play. If you would like to be a guest on this podcast, you can by emailing me at studio@newwaveheroes.com. Please also visit our website where you can find out more about me, this podcast, and the New Wave Heroes radio show. Thank you for listening as always. Bye for now.